Okay, nerds, welcome. had some emergency issues, not like life or death emergency, but like I need to be able to see kind of emergency. So notice the new glasses. Hi. So yes, welcome to another live episode starting 15 minutes late. I am so sorry, anybody who was waiting. Apologies. But yes, we are here to do the thing. I had intended on managing the face a little bit because the beard's getting a little out of control. But again, things that needed to be taken care of. So this coming week, we should be one of the last regular weeks for a while. And then I think there are concerts and things where I will be trying to get more content for the show, but we might have to be skipping an episode again, not this coming week, but potentially the week after. I will keep you informed. Stay tuned to the community tab on the YouTube channel, the main YouTube channel, actually probably both YouTube channels. And also the Twitter is probably where it will get updated as well. Potentially Instagram, but if you're only following on Instagram, you probably aren't even watching the stream right now. So, Christopher Ortiz, hello, sir. Welcome to a late starting episode. I apologize about the late start. I know it's even later for you. Happy St. Patrick's Day, though. That was part of the issue, is celebrating St. Patrick's Day in the way we celebrate most things, with food. Me and the lady like to do the foods, so that was part of the delay, and I apologize. It took a little bit longer to get home than anticipated. So I think we've gone through the housekeeping that's pertinent. I do want to do something slightly different this week, in that I gotta find them, but there's a couple of... Where is it? Murphy's Multiverse. There it is. There's a couple of rumors that I really wanted to touch on. And I don't know exactly where the source I got them from. So we might do a little bit of searching today, but we have some James Gunn stuff going on. We have some... Ben Affleck rumors. We're going to touch on that a little bit more directly. We have Shazam numbers. We're going to talk about Star Wars. That's why the title of the episode has to do with Star Wars, because there's some Star Wars to talk about. I think that's roughly it. Oh, and there's also... instead for the music portion tonight, we're going over to Rolling Stone instead of one of the regular music sources, because Rolling Stone just published their annual Hard Rock Top 100 or whatever. So we're going to be talking about that at the end of the news portion. Mr. Chris, I just watched... Let's do a very, very... brief that just happened portion real quick, because I want to see if you've watched this. Have you seen Megan yet? Because I watched Megan just the other day, actually talked about it in the episode of That Just Happened that has yet to make it up onto the main channel. And I was unimpressed. Definitely, like, old school Chucky is much better than this Megan. I haven't seen the reboot Child's Play with Mark Hamill doing the voice, but don't think I'm going to watch it now, because I heard that Megan is the better of the two, and I really didn't like Megan. So, since you are horror aficionado, Christopher Ortiz, have you seen Megan? Let's talk about that while I set up the news portion. Where is it? Right there. Ba-ba-pow! Okay, so starting things off, we have Shazam opening night because this is the opening weekend. But opening night numbers for Shazam are in. They are not great. So Fury of the Gods box office opened with a $3.4 million Thursday night, preview screenings in which the first movie was $5.9 million. Sequel is also estimated to have a lot lower opening weekend with $35 million if it's lucky. The first movie opened with $53 million. And eventually brought in almost $366 million. Didn't really like it. Yeah, old school Chucky is way better. So the reason why, and that's all I want to talk about for the Shazam numbers. So we're going to go back to this conversation for a moment. But the reason why I think old school Chucky is better is because there was a sense of humor there. the big thing about, because like, the Uncanny Valley is a thing, and I guess it was a little bit less for original Chucky because like they were trying to make it look like a doll. The Megan doll, they're trying to make look like a little girl, but they're also, I don't know, just the practical effects that looks like they're trying to go super realistic, and Uncanny Valley just kind of detract, it pulls you away from it automatically. So what original Chucky did was kind of leaned into that. Oh, it's uncomfortable to look at this doll be menacing and say these horrible things. I get the concept, but like, why with dolls? It's kind of weird. Yeah, there's that too. There's definitely a good portion of that. But like Chucky leans into that uncanny valley-ness, and like, we already know it's weird. We already know like it's hard to take this seriously. So we're going to crack jokes. We're going to have a little bit of dick and fart humor. And that's going to be kind of a defining characteristic of the character. Granted, in later Chucky movies, I'm looking at you, Seed of Chucky and Bride of Chucky, good Lord. They kind of leaned a little too hard into the comedy, and then it was just like there was really very, very little redeeming value there. But yeah, the first like two, I want to say maybe even up to the third Chucky worked because it had a sense of humor about the horror elements that are going on screen. Megan, I feel like would have benefited greatly from a sense of humor because that was just, I don't know. It was lifeless to be completely on the nose about it. There was no anything great about it. It was barely even like watchable as background noise. I'm going to say that. Let's get over to the news. I didn't talk about this in this week's episode because I wanted to talk about it on the live show, and that is Ben Affleck apparently going against what we talked about last time we talked about Affleck and the DCU. It's this rumor, and this isn't original to Cosmic Book. I think this one comes from THR, and it's a lot of inference from people based on this THR interview. So let's read the article, and then we'll talk about the reversal, the about face, if you will. Modern day horror movies, electronics concepts are cool, but electronic dolls, I don't think it'll work well. I think there is a way to do it. I think for sure. But you can't, there's never going to be a way to do a killer doll that is 100% serious through and through. That just won't work. Just because of the societal relationship to what dolls are, you wouldn't be able to do it as a straight horror movie. It would have to be horror comedy to some degree, which is exactly what Chucky is. Again, a lot harder on the comedy aspect of that for the latter installments of the series, but still. And also, I think with modern technology, like you're saying, with modern technology, there is a way to do better practical effects, and that would help something that wasn't trying to be a doll. Like because the CG effects really don't benefit any horror movie unless it's like so Lovecraftian, like the only way to conceptual, to visually see this manifestation of evil is through these crazy CG effects. That's the only time CG really benefits a horror movie. Horror movies are visceral and like you are there. Even like you watch Slither now and see those really terrible, or we just watched The Faculty as well a couple nights ago, and just the absolutely atrocious CG doesn't work. The only time The Faculty, the monster in The Faculty works is when you have the practical monster that's there so that they can touch the thing. So that being said, modern electronics, modern implementation of practical effects being potentially amazing could benefit a movie if implemented as a proper monster or as the proper whatever the antagonist is for the horror movie. If you do it as a doll, you really have to play up the comedy element of it, because nobody's going to take a doll seriously unless you crack some jokes at the same time. So yeah, 100%. Yeah, I think we're on the same page with that. Okay, so Ben Affleck, now apparently, according to rumor, is not interested in directing for James Gunn in the DCU. So Ben Affleck won't be suiting up, according to Cosmic Book News. Ben Affleck won't be suiting up as Batman, and he also won't be directing anything for James Gunn in the DCU. In an interview with THR, Ben Affleck is asked if DC came to him now and asked if he wants to direct something, would he? Affleck responds that he doesn't have any interest in the way James Gunn is doing things. Ouch. So the quote that they picked from this interview is this right here. It's again, so if DC came to you now and said, do you want to direct something? Affleck's response, according to this, it's seemingly cherry-picked. From what I've heard, this is a little cherry-picked. I would not direct something for Gunn's DC. Absolutely not. I have nothing against James Gunn. Nice guy, and he's going to do a great job. I just wouldn't want to go in and direct the way they're doing that. I'm not interested in that. All right, so that's, again, the cherry-picked bit. The thing I love about Cosmic Book is when they do quotes, they do also link to the full article. So guess where we're going next? The article. It's going to take a second to find this, so let's go back to check chat real quick. All right, we're good. Oops, I didn't want to minimize that. Recently had COVID, blah, blah, blah. Matt Damon, what is the advice you got? Working. Okay. So, you're launching this company at a time when the movie business is changing. We're going to read a couple of questions before the actual Batman question, because from what I am to understand, there is a little bit of context that is missing from all of these people quoting directly this three-sentence response. All right, so... talking about launching a company, he's launching a production company. So when the Way Back came out, I knew it came out the weekend they shut theaters down with COVID. But that's not an excuse, because I knew it was just it was coming out just the tracking. I was like, okay, here's a movie about a guy, son dies, gets divorced, alcoholic. Nobody's going to go to the theater to see this effing movie. They're just not. I felt it. Succession is on. Ozark, Narcos, Game of Thrones. I love that everybody loves Succession. It's such a good show. You're not competing with Simon and Simon and 11-inch black and white TV. There's really beautiful stuff being made. My daughter is 17. She lives her life largely in opposition to the work her parents have spent their lives dedicating to, where she'll say things like, I'm not sure film is really... Do you think it's a genuine art form? Oh, that's a pretty scathing question, honestly. Pretty loaded question. I like the fact that she has a silver rapier tongue. But anyway, I went into it going, okay, these movies aren't effing working anymore, and these are the ones I like. As opposed to... the Justice League experience, the fact that those stories became somewhat repetitive to me and less interesting. Yeah, I finally figure out how to play that character, Batman, and nailed it in The Flash for 5 minutes. For the 5 minutes I'm there, it's really great. A lot of it's just tone. You've got to figure out what's your version of the person. Who is the guy that fits what you can do? I tried to fit myself into Batman, and by the way, I like a lot of the stuff we did, especially the first one. So he's talking pretty highly about the character. But not Justice League. What went wrong there? Asked the Hollywood Reporter. Justice League, you could teach a seminar on all the reasons why this is how not to do it, ranging from production to bad decisions to horrible personal tragedy and just ending with the most monstrous taste in my mouth. The genius and silver lining is that Zack Snyder eventually went to AT&T and was like, look, I can get you 4 hours of content, and it's principally just all of the slow motion that he shot in black and white and one day of shooting with me and him. He was like, do you want to come shoot in my backyard? And I was like, I think there are unions, Zach. I think we have to make a deal. But I went and did it, and now Snyder's Justice League is my highest rated movie on IMDb. No way. No way. I don't buy that at all. We'll double check that math in a little bit. And then Hollywood Reporter comes back. Isn't Zack Snyder fans are so intense online? You say what you want. It's my highest rated career movie. I've never had one that went from nadir to pinnacle. Retroactively, it's a hit. All of a sudden, I was getting congratulated for the bomb I'm in. Whoa. But I was going to direct a Batman and Justice League made me go, I'm out. I never want to do any of this again. I'm not suited. That was the worst experience I've ever been in the business, which is full of some messy experiences. Broke my heart. There was an idea of someone, Joss Whedon, coming in. Like, I'll rescue you and we'll do 60 days of shooting and I'll write the whole thing around what you have. I've got the secret. And it wasn't the secret. It was hard. And I started to drink too much and was back to hotel in London. It was either that or jump out the window. Oh my God. And I just thought, this isn't the life I want. My kids aren't here. I'm miserable. You want to go to work and find something interesting to hang on to rather than just wearing a rubber suit. And most of it, you're just standing against a computer screen going, if this nuclear waste gets loose, we'll... That's fine. I don't condescend to that or put it down, but I got to a point where I found it creatively not satisfying. Also, just you're sweaty and exhausted, and I thought, I don't want to participate in this in any way. I don't want to squander any more of my life, which I have a limited amount. So if DC, okay, here we go. This is the question. So if DC came to you now and said, do you want to direct something? I would not direct something for James Gunn. Absolutely not. I have nothing against James Gunn. Nice guy. He's going to do a great job. I wouldn't go in and direct that. That's the one we just read. And then they come back. I heard you say recently 15% of movie budgets are waste. Which 15% are you talking about? Maybe not. Maybe he really is that hard on DC right now. Did you get it figured out, baby? I'm sorry. I don't believe in the whole I get paid even in failure thing. It's always struck me as bizarre that I walked away with so much money from Geely and everyone else got flattened. Seems a little bit like I was not aligned quite in with the investors in that regard. The studios and the people who make the movies are increasingly separate from different worlds. They don't understand one another's values and there's suspicion. Creates conflict. I was on Live by Night. They were dressing an extra. It must have cost $700 to dress this extra in the period. 500 feet away from the camera. And we were waiting while they did touch-ups. And I was like, guys, this is not meaningful, but it's taking away from the time and the resources we have to do something authentically enough that it moves the audience. They don't care if the curls are 1930 or 1920. Oh, boy. Interesting. So, yeah. So, that is a legit, not cherry-picked. He is just that sour on... I don't even think it's specifically DC. I think it's superhero stuff in general. Affleck, I believe, and this has kind of been the case for a while, kind of fancies himself an artiste, if you will. So, yeah, I think that's probably a fair part of it. Gunn said he spoke with Ben Affleck. Back to the Cosmic Book article. Interesting is when Gunn and Safran announced their new DCU slate, including the Batman movie, Brave and the Bold, Gunn actually said he spoke with Ben Affleck, and Ben Affleck is part of their team, and he really wants to direct one of the DCU projects. And worth a mention is that Gunn also spoke with Gal Gadot and Henry Cavill. So assuming James Gunn really did talk with Ben Affleck, it appears Ben Affleck got a sense of whatever direction Gunn and Safran... Oh, that's what I heard was trademark. No, I don't think this is specific to Gunn. I don't think that at all. I think this is superhero movies. I think potentially James Gunn embellished, because he... I'm not necessarily going to call him a liar, but you make with that what you will. I think Gunn embellished about Affleck's enthusiasm for comic book movies. I think, or there is also the potential that Affleck maybe said something in passing that was misconstrued by Gunn, and therefore he made the statement of, you know, being interested in directing something in the DCU. Bygones be bygones. My girlfriend with the great pun, Affleck should let bygones be bygones. back into the window. Okay. So assuming James Gunn related, blah, blah, blah. Oh, didn't like it and chose not to be involved. Affleck can be seen in Batman and Flash June 16th recently. He said, yeah, so his cameo apparently in Aquaman 2 has been cut in favor of, I believe the rumor is saying that Michael Keaton's Batman is taking Ben Affleck's Batman's place in the movie. That's too many possessives. Yeah, and then they go on to that whole really rough. Oh, that is why it's because of the Justice League experience that he doesn't want to do superhero movies anymore. I mean, like, and who can legitimately blame him? That was a really terrible situation. James Gunn shoots down Robert Pattinson TV rights fake news. Como? James Gunn shoots down more. That was what I wanted to cover for the Ben Affleck stuff. It doesn't look like Affleck is going to be going forward with Warner Brothers. Pattinson, though, is going to be going forward with Warner Brothers. So this is a rumor that I have not seen previous to this apparent debunking of the rumor. But James Gunn shoots down more info related to DC at the time of one of the clickbait farm sites ran with a fake news article about how Robert Pattinson, quote, probably, unquote, can't appear in the upcoming Penguin series coming to HBO Max as Batman. It was claimed that the TV rights surrounding Batman are in, quote, legal limbo, unquote, due to the Batman TV rights involving Disney, Fox, and various mergers, which would mean Robert Pattinson wouldn't be able to appear in Penguin as Batman, but Pattinson could still appear as Bruce Wayne. Well, that seems ridiculous. Why would Disney have any... Because of Fox? Because of the animated rights? That would make a little bit more sense, but that would have nothing to do with Robert Pattinson, even if that was true, because Fox at one point had the animated rights to Batman, but they did not have the live-action rights to Batman. And they have long since lost those rights, so there's no reason to think that that would still be a thing. Or the rights reverted or something. Either way, Warner Brothers has had them for some time. James Gunn caught wind of the article when a fan brought it up on Twitter, and Gunn shut it down. This is not true, said James Gunn. Another fan also questioned about it being a rights issue. The rights issue is not true, replied Gunn. So there we have it. Batman is not appearing in TV, and it has nothing to do with Disney, Fox, or whoever else might have alleged TV rights over the character. And it wouldn't be live-action TV rights. It would be animated rights. And this is not an issue. All right. Keep Batman away from TV. So the... folks over at Cosmic Book believe this could be a good thing. If I had to guess, it's the producers attached to Batman who don't want the character watered down on television, as DC shows like those on the CW aren't all that good. Fair, but I think the Penguin's going to be just a little bit different. Flash, Superman, and Lois will be done with their respective characters' movies or when their respective characters' movies are released. And even the Gotham TV series doesn't begin to match the spectacle of Big Batman movie. True. All of this is very true, but that's because all of this has been on the CW. If you look at the production value of the Titans series once it moved over, well, even when it was on what was the name of the DC streaming service before it got just absorbed into HBO Max, I can't remember. But that and Doom Patrol both were pretty good. Like, I'm not saying they were as good as the movies, but they also didn't have anyone who was related to the movies as part of their production team. So there's no reason to believe that they could have been as good as the movies because of that information. So this being done by Matt Reeves and his production staff, that shows us every reason why this could be just as good. So I think this is a silly point to be making, but we will continue reading it until we're over the points. Case in point, the new Gotham Knights series, again, on the CW, totally unrelated to anything going on in the DCU. So why are we using this as our example? New Gotham Knights series is getting completely rejected by critics and fans. It's the worst rated DC show on Rotten Tomatoes by both, with the show being about the aftermath of a dead Batman. So again, if I'm in charge of Batman, I'm keeping him the heck away from TV. That's why Batgirl got ditched, as they hurt the overall DC brand. That's fair as well, but irrelevant, because Batgirl doesn't really work without Batman, and they were trying to make Batgirl work without Batman in another Elseworlds kind of story. So it's we're comparing apples and oranges here. These are not one and the same. That said, Matt Reeves, who did a terrific job with Robert Pattinson in the Batman, is developing the Penguin series, so I wouldn't mind seeing an appearance from Robert Pattinson, which certainly would boost the number of people that watch the show. So you're just going to make a point and then shoot down your own point. Is that what you're saying? However, I liked the Batman so much, seen it 3 or 4 times, that keeping Pattinson on screen makes things even more special, and Reeves isn't directing the episodes. Penguin is only around 8 episodes and follows what happened in the Batman, so it can very well lead to Batman 2 and be its own thing. Penguin is now filming. Batman 2 Part 2 releases October 3rd of 25. Yeah, I don't think that's an accurate comparison to make. First reaction, Bruce Campbell F-bombs fans. Bombing on Rotten Tomatoes. James Gunn confirms he'll be... All right, so this is another thing I wanted to talk about, is James Gunn directing Superman Legacy. I don't remember... Do you remember offhand which actress James Gunn is married to, baby? Because that's part of the issue that people are having with this, is James Gunn wife. Is he keeps casting his wife, and I can't remember which one is his wife. She's the one that was in Peacemaker. Jennifer Holland. So... what the hell is she going to be in? Let's go to her wiki, shall we? Oops. Wuck. Wikipedia. Jennifer Holland. Holland, right there. American actress. Younger than me. Oh, boy. Best known for her work as Amelia Harcourt in DC Extended Universe Productions, Suicide Squad, Peacemaker, Black Adam, Shazam, Fury of the Gods. Also appeared American Pie. So she's in Shazam. She's Amelia Harcourt. This character is... is fairly... I don't know if integral would be... an accurate word, but she is at least adjacent. it makes sense for her character to show up. I'm pretty sure she got cast long before they were married. So I don't know if that's a fair thing to be good. So the reason we're talking about this is because a lot of people are taking serious issue with not just the idea of James Gunn directing a movie when he is the head of the production studio, which I think that's a weird thing to get grumpy about. He started his career as a director, so why wouldn't he continue to direct? Now that he's got a position of power, he can cherry pick the things he wants to direct. That's part of the perks of the job. But, like, the casting of his wife, they weren't married until into production of Peacemaker, if I'm remembering correctly. And so she was cast in that role maybe when he was trying to get with her. I don't know exactly how their courtship went, but I think it's fairly irrelevant because she was cast before they were together. So the fact that her character shows up, maybe there's a little bit of an issue with the fact that he's finding a way to incorporate this character into as many storylines as he is, because he is, again, the man in charge. So, but like, that's such a minor gripe. If she doesn't detract from the story, if she even benefits the story, then there really is no issue here, right? All right, let's read the article. I'm done going on my little rant. But James Gunn confirms he's directing Superman Legacy movie, which has been in development and writing. Gunn took to Twitter, which follows DC Comics writer Tom King recently confirming the news. Quote, "Yes, I'm directing Superman Legacy. It will be released on July 11th, 2025. My brother Matt..." There's another one of them? That was bad enough. We had James and Sean. Ooh, those look nice. You have bat wings on your skates. All right, sorry. Yes, I'm directing Superman Legacy to be released July 11th, 2025. My brother Matt told me when he saw the release date, he started to cry. I asked him why. He said, "Dude, it's Dad's birthday. I hadn't realized," said Gunn. That's fun. Okay. Gunn continued, "I lost my dad almost 3 years ago. He's my best friend." He was your best friend. He didn't remember his birthday? That's fun. "Didn't understand me as a kid, but he supported my love of comics and my love of film and wouldn't be making this movie now without him." Gunn added, "It's been a long road to this point. I was offered Superman years ago. I initially said no because I didn't want to have a way in that felt unique and fun and emotional that gave Superman the dignity he deserved," which is a good quote, I think. "Then a bit less than a year ago, I saw a way in many ways centered around Superman's heritage, how both his aristocratic Kryptonian parents and his Kansas farmer parents inform who he is and the choices he makes," said Gunn. "So I chose to finally take on writing the script, but I was hesitant to direct despite the constant pestering by Peter Safran and others to commit. Sorry, Peter," offers Gunn. Gunn tweeted, "Just because I write something doesn't mean I feel it in my bones, visually and emotionally, enough to spend over 2 years directing it, especially not something of this magnitude. But the long and the short of it is, I love this script, and I'm incredibly excited as we begin this journey. # up, up, and away." That's fair. I don't understand why there's such an issue with this. He can direct a movie and still do a better job than Kevin Feige at being the man in charge. Like, the two are not mutually exclusive. It will be harder to do. I think if anyone can do it that is positioned to do it, I think Gunn is probably the one to do it. I don't know who else besides Feige is really in that kind of position with any other properties, but maybe to a weird extent Henry Cavill with the Warhammer stuff, but I don't even think that's legit. Yeah, we don't care what Superman Legacy is about. We kind of already just read that. So I think we're almost to do we have a proper release date for this Power Rangers thing? No, still no proper release date, it looks like. Global. Oh, yes, we do. April 19th. Cool. April 19th for the Power Rangers Once and Always, a special movie, which is going to have OG Red Ranger, OG Blue Ranger, OG Black Ranger, and then one of the secondary Pink Rangers. I don't think the original Pink Ranger is coming back for it, which, I mean, that's the ones that I grew up with, man. They can't have the original Yellow Ranger because she is tragically passed, but This one kind of breaks my heart, even though I didn't watch the season one yet. I will. I'm going to. I don't care how bad people tell me it is. And then we're going to talk about it on That Just Happened. But I loved that Willow movie so much as a kid. I can't not watch the sequel, which is this season of Disney Plus programming. So Disney Plus cancels Willow after one season. Highly anticipated return of Warwick Davis fizzled with fans and won't be moving forward. The article says, today, say goodbye to Willow as it is learned that the series has been canceled at Disney Plus after only one season, with the news coming 2 months after the 8-episode first season concluded its run. What did you just throw at me? Oh. Okay. It's known Willow is the lowest rated series on Disney Plus. Oh man, I'm still watching it. I don't care. I'm still watching it. With the fans not liking the series, Rotten Tomatoes audience score dropped to a low of 27%, and the show only has a dismal 5.6 rating on IMDb. Out of only 481,000 households watched the first two episodes, Willow in its 5 days in its first 5 days of release, which is lower than the 1 million or more plus that the Star Wars and some of the Marvel shows normally average. The news comes from Deadline, who says the cancellation comes amid Lucasfilm reassessing its film slate, as Disney CEO Bob Iger recently said Disney is taking a careful look. We talked about this. Why is Willow so bad? We've actually gone through that once or twice as well. So, kind of breaks my heart, but I'm still going to watch it, man. You can't stop me. Henry Cavill is back in the Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. First look. Nope, don't care. Flash action figures reveal villain. Prime Video's Blade Runner 2099 gets Game of Thrones director Jodie Comer rumored. Set 50 years after the sequel. Interesting. We got a little bit more around this 2099 situation. Blade Runner 2099 series in development at Prime Video will be directed by Game of Thrones director. The whole series will be directed by her, or is she doing just some episodes? Because if the whole series is directed by her, that technically makes her the showrunner, right? Jeremy Podeswa, who directed 6 Game of Thrones episodes at HBO, will direct the pilot episode, so she's not directing all of them. Jodie Comer is known for Killing Eve, Last Duel, Free Guy with Ryan Reynolds, and played Rey's mom in Star Wars Rise of Skywalker. Said to be in talks for the lead role. Oh, I see what they're... Okay, I was totally misreading. So, Game of Thrones director is not Jodie Comer. Gotcha. Okay, Jeremy Podeswa will be directing an episode, and he directed Game of Thrones. Gotcha, okay. I'm caught up. I'm with you. Jodie Comer is known for these things. Recently spilled the beans on the problems of Brie Larson and the Marvels. Comer has also surfaced for Marvel's Fantastic Four as Sue Storm, a.k.a. the Invisible Woman. No plot details are known about Blade Runner 2099, so I take that back. We don't know anything necessarily new about Blade Runner 2099. Sad, because that's going to be another one that, in spite of how bad it might be whenever it comes out, I'm still going to watch it, because I really like the Blade Runner movies. Like, love the Blade Runner movies, you might even say. I don't know what just happened there. All right. Big plans for Doctor Who. Flash teases Michael Keaton. I think we just need to go to... There we go. Disney Star Wars. So this is the headline that I was talking about in the... For the episode, Mandalorian Season 3 gives Disney Plus another loss, according to Cosmic Book. So, I don't think this is, again, this is just sensationalism in headlines, because I think this is not necessarily indicative of the quality. And I don't even think this is indicative of, like, the fan appreciation for the series, but we're going to get into that. So the article goes, interest might be waning in The Mandalorian and Baby Yoda as it is learned the season 3 premiere didn't hold up well for Disney Plus. Define well. Episode also happens to be the lowest rated on Rotten Tomatoes for the show, not the lowest episode, the lowest rated episode on Rotten Tomatoes, as that vocabulary would kind of lead you to believe. It's not even the lowest rated episode of Disney Plus programming on Rotten Tomatoes and IMDb. Lowest rated episode of The Mandalorian. Remember, Mandalorian has been gone for 2 years, so the first episode kind of needed to go a little bit slow to bring everybody back up to speed, because normies don't just follow this stuff constantly, and they're not champing at the bit to do it. Episode also happens, blah, 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 which features those goofy space pirates and the Pirate King, and episode 2 wasn't much better, as not much is going on, and it's just more of the same, featuring more goofy-looking creatures. I don't think that's accurate. Viewership data has been released by Samba TV, who has accessed over 25 million connected TVs, and per the rap, Mandalorian again gets beat out by Book of Boba Fett, which, save for those two Luke Skywalker episodes, is a terrible series. I wouldn't say terrible. Not great. It's good. I dug it. But I can understand why other people didn't. Data reveals that Book of Boba Fett season premiere beat out The Mandalorian season 3 premiere by 2%. 2%! Statistically, that's nothing. According to data previously released by Samba TV, as Book of Boba Fett was watched by 1.7 million households, Mandalorian Season 3 came in just shy of that number at 1.6, according to this graphic they have up here. Update. Samba revealed the above graphic that shows, the 1.6, which is around 6% difference, which is still statistically almost insignificant. 6%, anything beyond like 3% becomes slightly significant. So like 3 to, I think they consider 3 to 10, maybe 15% is slightly, has a minor significance. Book of Boba Fett final season finale, released last year in February, also happened to crush Mandalorian Season 2 finale by 36%. And I think that's also part of it, because people felt a little burned by Boba Fett because it wasn't as good as Mandalorian. So they're not going to return until they know for sure. And I haven't watched Episode 3. I heard Episode 3 of Season 3 is a little slow as well, which kind of sucks, but also covers a lot of ground that was going to be covered in the Gina Carano series that got canceled. So still, building worlds and worth your time, especially because we're getting to the Mythosaur. Also learned, Mandalorian Season 3 premiere fell short of the Obi-Wan Kenobi series. Again, that shouldn't surprise anybody, by a whopping 28%. Another not-so-good series from Lucasfilm. Nobody knew it was going to be not-so-good when it launched. That's why 28% higher. Short of Loki by 35%, which people actually loved Loki. Loki has a bigger, higher profile these days than Mandalorian, though. So, again, this shouldn't really be a shock. I think The Mandalorian has to fight an uphill battle, but I think it's definitely a battle worth fighting. Numbers from Andor. 50% more households watched Andor. Wait, what? Mandalorian season premiere was watched by... Oh, Mandalorian was 50% more. Andor is a really good series. Stick with it. Yeah, I still haven't watched Andor. Season 2 is already in the works for Andor. Cool. Keep your helmet on. Recently, as seen by Disney CEO Bob Iger, offered Disney is going to take a careful look at Star Wars Marvel. The Wall Street execs previously slated they are skeptical of both brands' abilities to do anything for Disney Plus. Quote, Star Wars, we made three what we called saga films, which is obviously the successors to George Lucas's first six. They did very well at the box office, tremendously well, as a matter of fact, said Iger. We've made two so-called standalones in Rogue One and Solo. Rogue One did quite well. Solo was a little disappointing to us. Gave us pause just to think maybe the cadence was a little too aggressive, and so we decided to pull back a bit. We still are developing Star Wars films. We're going to make sure that when we make one, it's the right one, so we are being very careful there, he said. Worth a mention is that Iger said the reason for the pullback at Star Wars and Marvel is because of too much quantity. That's not really the case at all. The real problem is the quality. Yes. And we talked about that last week in the live show, so we're not going to continue with that article. So yeah, that's the headline right there. John Wick. Probably we watch it eventually, but right now don't really care. And then we're into stuff that we covered in the regular show this last week. Speaking of the regular show this last week, Yeah, that edit was a little brutal for me, so it kind of took an extra day to get up, and I apologize, but it is what it is. So, now, let's see if we can get into some rumors. Murphy's Multiverse exclusive reports is a pretty good source for the rumor monger, rumor mill stuff. Blah, blah, blah. This is all old things. Reviews and features, latest. All right. Shazam, let's... No, maybe not. Maybe we aren't going to do what I thought we could do. Guillermo del Toro. Ooh, Guillermo del Toro's doing Frankenstein? How did I not miss, or how did I not see that before? As Guillermo del Toro continues to work on the script for his Netflix feature film Frankenstein! A new report indicates that the director has begun meeting with talent for the film. Deadline reports that while no deals have been finalized just yet, Del Toro has met with Andrew Garfield, Mia Goth, Oscar Isaac for roles in the project. Oscar Isaac in a Frankenstein movie, be him the monster or the scientist, I think would be really freaking cool. I really dig Oscar Isaac. I don't think there's anything that man cannot do a fantastic job in. Del Toro has been very public about his longstanding desire to develop a film around Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. In 2008, the writer-director told Coming Soon that he's been dreaming of doing a Frankenstein movie since I was a child, quote-unquote. Del Toro struck an overall deal with Netflix in 2020 and has been working towards getting Frankenstein off the ground since. Del Toro seems to be assembling a dream cast for his dream project, which is expected to begin production in June. Mia Goth, though, is just weird-looking. That's all I got. Yeah, I think drew him to his mysterious Thunderbolts mural. Yeah, like, we don't already know what you're doing. And then we're into the stuff that we've already covered. I really thought there was going to be more. I'm going to do this in a different window, but I'm going to try it nonetheless. There's got to be rumor mill stuff. Broken Heart, yeah. Ed Boon finally watched the finale of The Last of Us. Where they are. Sources. Daniel Rickman. Yeah, so Daniel Rickman going on about... he doesn't understand. Same thing about the James Gunn stuff. She's been killing that role. She's one of the best parts of Peacemaker, so I have no problem seeing more Amelia Harcourt in the DCU. Yeah, who cares if she's married to the guy who cast her? She's doing a pretty good job. The quote tweet that was quote tweeted in his quote tweet, James Gunn has responded to backlash claiming he cast his wife Jennifer Holland in every DC project. Quote, the only DC movie I ever cast my wife in was The Suicide Squad. I had nothing to do with the casting of any other movie. It's accurate. Josh over at the Nerd... What is it? Nerdvengers. The Den of Nerds. Is the one that I reference regularly because he's the one that has one of the biggest issues with it because he thinks it's sketchy. But... she was cast before she was his wife, so I don't understand the issue. Lance Reddick was my Dr. Voodoo fan cast. F. I don't get it. Oh, that's right. I forgot. He passed, didn't he? That's correct. So, all right, let's pull that up. We're going to pull this up here. So that I can have them on screen. We'll just do the Google images. So Lance Reddick. This guy right here, he played Wesker in that really not great Resident Evil series on Netflix. He was in Fringe. I loved him in Fringe. He was, I believe, he was in John Wick. He was in The Wire. There was something else that I was like, damn, this guy. But you know him from something too that I didn't just list, don't you? That was somebody else. But yeah, just a lot of stuff. Really good actor. Really dug the dude's talent. Passed away. Let's go to the New York Times, since that's where this picture comes from. New York Times. Lance Reddick, prolific actor. Died Friday. He was 60. Death confirmed by his publicist, Mia Hansen. She did not say where he died or cite the cause. So, to be determined what took him. But man, White House down, Bosch, Fringe again. Just a hell of a talent, and it's unfortunate. Just highly, highly unfortunate. Okay, let's check Bounding. Bounding will have something good, I think. Bounding into comics. J.J. Abrams produced Batman Cape Crusader, saved by Amazon. We already covered that. Blade reboot delayed to Mahershala Ali being unhappy with proposed script. That's been the reason the whole time, I feel like. Disney star Josh Gad buys into narrative that any and all criticism of live-action Little Mermaid is racist, decries critics as broken and pathetic. Blah. Ben Affleck absolutely buries working. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Knights of the Zodiac, don't care. Original Silent Hill 2 art director Masahiro Ito responds after being attacked for retweeting Matt Walsh's definition of a woman, says activists don't have any interest in LGBTQ and just want to attack someone who they don't like. Fair enough. Nintendo America present justifies $70 price tag for Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom because everyone else is going to $70. Dr. Stone, Disney CEO Bob Iger calls into question the quality of Marvel films and TV shows. Company renews low-key writer Michael Waldron's contract. That's funny that's the headline. Rails against the use of the term JRPG. It wasn't a compliment to a lot of developers in Japan. Yeah, you're creating a separate group for what should be all the same video game genre. Star Wars declared worse and woker than ever after confirmation of intimacy coordinator. Oh, interesting. We can check into that, because why do you need an intimacy coordinator for anything to do with Star Wars? I mean, anything, because Star Wars, the sex is not part of Star Wars. Not like explicitly. There's the implicit in that Vader and Amidala had kids, but that is so far removed from any of the actual story. Upcoming Star Wars series, The Acolyte, helmed by former Harvey Weinstein. Good on you for including that. That's so pointless. Why do we have to drag everything? Because everything has to be sensationalized. Harvey Weinstein assistant Leslie Headland had an intimacy coordinator as part of its production. Sarah Poot Associates, which describes itself as the leading UK independent agency representing behind the camera, technical and production talent from producers and directors through heads of department and crew, details on their website that Adelaide Waldrop is the lead intimacy coordinator for 8 episodes of the first season of The Acolyte. If you are unfamiliar with intimacy coordinators, continues the article, SAG-AFTRA notes the position is, quote, an advocate, a liaison between actors and production, and a movement coach and or choreographer in regards to nudity, simulated adult acts, and other intimate and hyper-exposed scenes. Why would any of that be in a Star Wars project? That doesn't make any sense. Like, that's pointless. That is so dumb. Union specifically details intimacy coordinators acts as an advocate, a quote, acts as an advocate who serves as a liaison between actors and a production, ensures that the performers and other production personnel adhere to proper safety protocols, serve as a resource in realizing a director's vision, assume the role of a movement choreographer if required by the director to enhance believability, strives to build an environment in which actors understand what is expected of them in hyper-exposed scenes to give their informed and continued consent. Why do you need naked people in Star Wars? That's because that is explicitly the job of an intimacy coordinator as defined by SAG-AFTRA, who is the representation of all actors in Hollywood. Well, maybe not all. I think there might be another union that you could be part of. But that is like the major union, SAG-AFTRA, major union. So they're the ones that necessitated the position of an intimacy coordinator in movies where such things happen, or in any production where such things happen. So why do we have a Star Wars project that needs an intimacy coordinator? Like, up until this point, the most you've got on screen from anything Star Wars that is like romantic is like smooches and handholding, like the most mundane of affection towards somebody of the opposite, whatever. In any sort of romantic way. I'm not even going to go with the gendered thing. But in response to this revelation, YouTube Open Airlock Policy declared, quote, surprise, Star Wars is not saved. Star Wars is worse and woker than ever. Kathleen Kennedy, Jon Favreau, Dave Filoni, and all the rest of them don't care about real Star Wars fans, cater to a percentage of a percentage, and have thus run real fans off. I think that's also sensationalism. Like, that's just making this worse. There's no reason to go so far off the deep end when it probably has nothing to do with Favreau and Filoni. Maybe Kathleen, because she's the executive producer for all things Star Wars right now. But to bring Favreau and Filoni into this is rage bait. He adds, quote, people who hold out hope for good Star Wars are living in denial. Disney Star Wars is dead. Support real Star Wars, which is pre-2014. Anything less and you are as bad as those ruining the name. Back in 2020, Lucasfilm announced Acolyte. In the meantime, Hedlund confirmed the show will be a female-centric telling. YouTuber Fantastic Frankie, just because my show is technically, yes, quote, female-centric, unquote, meaning it centers around a female protagonist, I don't think that necessarily excludes men from that space. That's not really crazy mental gymnastics, but that's the setup. That's the illusion. That's what you're implying. She elaborated, quote, listen, I relate to male characters all the time. I like root for Mando, like I root for Luke. I deeply, deeply, well, not sure how much I care about Han Solo anymore, but when I was little, I really liked him. When I watch him now, I'm kind of like, gosh, a lot of my psyche makes sense now. All joking aside, I think that an inclusive space means an inclusive space. But at the same time, I think that just because something has a female protagonist doesn't mean it's only meant for women. That's a valid statement. Yes, 100%. But also saying it's female-centric implies that the men are at best secondary and more likely tertiary characters. So that's kind of a loose implication that they're not welcome. But I'm just playing devil's advocate with that one, because you can have a story that exists with mostly female characters and it could still be great. It doesn't matter. That's the point. Hedlund also went on to describe the show, saying, quote, I kind of see, like, if Star Wars is a religion, which I think we kind of agreed for the purposes of this interview it is, I like to think of my show as a tent revival. You can come over if you want to. We're going to be talking about some cool stuff. There's going to be some things we haven't discussed in canon yet. There are going to be some characters you don't know about. Okay. Continues. Would love you to join us. I would love you to be interested in it. But and if it's not your thing, the cool thing about Star Wars right now is there's so much you can align yourself with and invest yourself in. And if you don't like it, that's fine, she says. Okay, continue saying that if it bombs. Just keep stick to that story, and I think you'll be all right. She wanted to compare it to Indiana Jones. I would say it's in a pocket of the universe and a pocket of the time that we don't much talk about, which is, that's what I can say. When we were pitching, I had my designer create literally the Indiana Jones map, and then we go here, then we go here, like the little dotted red line. This is our journey. This is where we're going. I think we're just getting into the weeds beyond that. The rest of it, this doesn't really seem to matter. Because that's not the point. The point is, what the hell do they need an intimacy coordinator for? That's not a part of Star Wars. That's not what Star Wars is. Star Wars is space battles and crazy aliens and dumb. I think that's all we got, guys. Let's go over to Rolling Stone real quick. Yeah, we're going to go over to Rolling Stone now. Let's do it. Music. What? Unknown Mortal Orchestra, Mark. New album release with Meshuggah video. All right, we're just going to search for it. We're going to search for it. Where's the search bar? Right there. Search. Top 100. Ba 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 ba. I got nothing. 100 gex. Big Cudi Grace Jones. If we Google it, will we find it faster? I bet. Because the code here sucks. Where is it? Top. There it is. Top 100 greatest heavy metal songs of all time. Let's see how broken this shit is. We're going to go through this quick because I know it's not going to be good. Well, they at least got Ozzy, Metallica, and dude from Living Color in the header image, so that's at least promising. Big ol' excerpt about why they know what they're talking about, which is probably not accurate at all. Welcome to Hell, Venom. Okay, Venom, I can see. Crowbar. Didn't expect to see Crowbar in here. Fair. Executioner's Tax, Swing of the Axe, Power Trip, maybe Dillinger Escape Plan at 97. There better be some really good stuff on top of that. Girl School, I don't think that counts. I don't think that counts as a combining a new wave of America of British heavy metal thump with classic rock and roll sass. Nope, not at all. Davidian from Machine Head from 94. Anything pre-Black Album on the top 100? Or Black Album. What is that record? Blackening. There we go. Anything pre-Blackening on top 100? Probably not accurate. I can't think specifically of the song Davidian, but I very much doubt it. Helmet, In the Meantime. Okay. No. I like Helmet, but really, Hammer Smash Face, Cannibal Corpse, I'll give you that. Warlock, All We Are. No. No. Pretty much, there is a 90% chance anything from the 80s, really at all, save for some very few exceptions, does not deserve to be top 100 of all time. Just putting that one out there. Dream Theater, Pull Me Under. I can see it, I guess. I'm just not a big fan of Dream Theater, but they are super influential and, like, they do all of the things. So, yeah, okay. Bring the Noise. Yes, I think that probably should have been a little higher than number 90, but yes. Suicidal Tendencies, Can't Bring Me Down. I will 100% back anything from Suicidal Tendencies on this. Maybe not anything, but most anything from Suicidal Tendencies on this record or on this list. Life of Agony this time. Sure. Okay. Slaughter of the Soul at the Gates. 95 at the Gates. Okay, sure. Yeah, all right. I'll allow it. King Crimson at 86. Really? Ugh. There Goes the Neighborhood. Oh, that's such a classic track. I love this track. Yeah, There Goes the Neighborhood for sure. Again, probably should have been higher than that. Thunderkiss 65 at 84. That makes sense. World Eater from Bolt Thrower. Bolt Thrower made it on here? Bolt Thrower. On top 100 metal songs of all time. My girlfriend's cringing a little bit. No. Like, Bolt Thrower is good for a niche. But as far as top 100? Yeah, probably not. Spit from Kitty? No. Good song, sure. Top 100 of all time? Fuck no. Not going to take it from Twisted Sister. Borderline, not even metal. So there you go. Also from 1984. Not one of the exceptions to the rule I laid out a moment ago. My Own Summer, Deftones. At number 80 seems a little low, but not crazy low. Balls to the Wall from Accept. Good Lord, no. Dear God, no. No, 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 no. They put your balls to the wall. No, that's garbage. Hot garbage. Concubine from Converge definitely should be like top 30, maybe even top 20. If I were writing it for myself, it would be top 10. But yeah, absolutely 100% deserves to be on this list because Converge is one of the greatest metal bands ever. Doing No Small Part 2, Kurt Ballou's crazy freaking guitar. Jesus Christ Pose from Soundgarden. Maybe not that song, but definitely something from Soundgarden should have been on here. Black Hole Sun's a little overplayed. Also, borderline not metal, though. So, like, kind of conflicted about that one. Let's do Bathory. Sure, I'll allow Bathory. Probably should have been in the first 10 and not in the third 10, but okay. Youth Gone Wild, sure. Yeah, that would be, I feel like, one of the few hair metal bands that can find their way onto this list because of that record specifically. 18 in Life, probably a better song to have gone with, but Youth Gone Wild is a banger and a half. Chopped in Half by Obituary, probably should have been in like the 50s, but yeah, definitely deserves to be here. Du Hast by Rammstein, they have better music. They have much, much better music, and they deserve to be in the top 20. I don't care who's writing the list. Rammstein are incredible. Those guys should be top 20 on any top 100 list they are a part of. Napalm Death, You Suffer. Again, another one of those exceptions. Napalm Death are not hair metal, though, so yeah, definitely deserve to be here. Probably, once again, a little bit higher than the 70s, though not much. Mid-60s at best. Blood and Thunder at 71. Are you kidding me? This is another top 20. This is easily another top 20. Why is this at number 71? That's garbage. Flying Whales, Gojira. Top 20 of, or top 100 of all time? Yes. Number 70 seems a little low, but I guess I'll allow it. Merciful Fate, Evil. Sure, that's a good spot for Merciful Fate. Number 69. Yeah, I'll buy it. Running with the Devil. As much as I'm not a fan of Van Halen necessarily, that one makes sense as well. Blind by Korn. I gotta side with Finn McKinty on this one, and that Korn is one of the most influential bands of the last 30 freaking years. So to put them below number 50 is an insult. And especially to put them behind Quiet Riot. Oh my God, no. Bang Your Head. Yes, I can agree that this is, I can see the logic by putting this on here, but only in like the 90s, not in at number 66. Hell no. King's X, Over My Head. Okay. 65 seems fairly appropriate there. Typo Negative, Black number one. That's the song you go with? I mean, it, good song because, but like, wow, okay. Typo at 64 though. I would want to see Typo at like 54, but okay, that is what it is. Summertime Blues, not a metal song. Just gonna say that right now. Not a metal song at all. Doesn't deserve to be on here anywhere. Dragonaut Sleep 62. Yeah, that makes sense. Arch Enemy We Will Rise. This is pre What's Her Toes, and this is when Angela was still singing for him. At 61, Arch Enemy on the top 100 list. I don't necessarily buy that. Like, they're good, especially when Angela was fronting the band. But top 100 of all time, No, I don't think they deserve to be on the list. Slipknot, People Equal Shit at number 60. Probably the wrong song to put Slipknot on here for, but Long Walk Short Pier figured out, because Slipknot is another one of those. It's gotta be top 20 for sure. Mayhem, yes. Freezing Moon, good choice. Gotcha. 59 though. Okay, yeah, sure, I can see that. Sepultura, Refuse Resist at 58. Oh, that seems super low. I would say that's a top 30 track right there. My Dying Bride, Cry of... No. I don't think that they're influential really enough to find a place on this list. They're not a bad band, but they're not that great either. Ozzy Osbourne, Bark the Moon at 56. What the hell is in the top 20 for this list? Seriously. Faith No More, Caffeine. Not metal. Very much not metal. Like Mike Patton, avant-garde and noisy and heavy, sure, but is Faith No More really metal? Amazing, absolutely. Mike Patton is some sort of freaking mutant, but like, really? Oh my God, and to be behind Photograph, Def Leppard, Photograph, not an exception to the 1980s rule, by the way. Def Leppard does not deserve to be on this list. 46 and 2 by Tool, top 20 song. Why are you putting them at number 53? Deliverance, Opeth. As much as I love Opeth, I'm okay with them being in the 50s. I can understand why other people would not have the same appreciation for them as I do. But this comes from the Watershed record, doesn't it? I think so. 2002. Yeah, that comes from Watershed. Probably one of the greatest metal records of all time. So if I were writing the list, this would be top 10 without a doubt. But again, I understand why some people don't really have the same appreciation for them. Slateman, Godflesh. Godflesh at number 51. No, I can see them being on the list, sure, but not that high up. number 50, Procreation by Celtic Frost. Okay. Yeah, sure. That one's fine. Ministry, Just One Fix, 49. Yeah, 40s makes sense for Ministry. Queenswyke, Walk in the Shadows. No. This one might be a mild exception to the 1980s rule. But not this high up. Absolutely not this high up. Neurosis, Locust Star. Yes, Neurosis should be on this list, even though technically not metal either. But yeah, I would say Neurosis 47, though, seems really low, but that's probably just because I love them. Night Goat, the Melvins, not metal, not metal. Melvins kind of don't really like metal, by the way. Well, that's not 100% true. But yeah, Melvins are not metal. I love the Melvins. Melvins are great. Probably shouldn't have been on this list at all. Symphony of Destruction, number 45. Oof, that seems really low for Dave and the Boys. I would put them in the 30s, maybe. Caius Green Machine. Look at Josh Homme. Oh, man, I forgot he was that big. Oh, boy, I forgot he was that big. That's a heavy Josh Homme right there. Yes, Caius should be on this list. Should they be in the 40s? Sure. Okay, yeah, I can see that one. Evanescence, Bring Me to Life. Get that the hell right off this list. Sure, it made them millions of dollars and it got played forever and forever and forever, but top 100 of all time? No, absolutely not. Curse You All Men from Emperor. Yes, Emperor should be on here. Is that the track? Probably not, but whatever. Bleed from Meshuggah at 41. This list is officially broken. Really? 41 for Meshuggah? Meshuggah. I feel like in the current landscape of modern metal, the only band more influential than Meshuggah is Pantera. Thankfully, we have not come to a Pantera track yet, but Bleed should be top 10 easy. Easy. Victim of Changes by Judas Priest. Again, probably not the track to put on for Priest, but okay. 40, sure. For Whom the Bell Tolls at 39. Good God. That's a top 20 track right there. Killing in the Name at 38 seems a little low, but almost appropriate. Chop Suey at 37 seems fairly appropriate. Rock You Like a Hurricane should not be on this damn list. Fade to Black at 35 should be way higher up than that. This song is what... This is the reason why most metalheads, at least older metalheads, older millennial metalheads anyway, this is the reason why Double Kick is like the thing, because everybody heard that Double Kick intro, the bridge into the heavy bit, the darkness imprisoning me. And that is kind of a whole slew of subgenres of metal were born just from this one song. So to put that at 35 is an insult as well. Smoke on the Water, Deep Purple. They have better music, but I get it. 34 seems fairly appropriate. Kiss Me Deadly, Lita Ford. Yes, Lita Ford. Know this song. And also no to the being this high up. I don't see that as super influential to anyone, at least not at this level. Mother by Danzig, 32? Sure. Okay. Gotcha. Heaven and Hell, Black Sabbath. Yes, again, Black Sabbath should probably be on here for multiple songs, since we're doing top 100 metal songs of all time. Heaven and Hell, I can understand it because Dio, and that's probably one. But Rainbow in the Dark, no, the Rainbow is not Heaven and Hell. That's Dio by himself. Why can't I think? It's the one that Killswitch uncovered. The Holy Diver. Holy Diver makes a little bit more sense. No, but that's Dio as well. What the hell? Why can't I think of any? Maybe Heaven and Hell is the one that we should go with for Dio Sabbath. Should be maybe a little bit higher up. Enter Sandman probably should have been top 5. Just saying. Number 30, really? Walk at 29. You can get bent. Oh my God. Holy Wars, Punishment Due, Megadeth 28. This is their second on the list. I think the two tracks should probably be switched. But yeah, I get it. Judas Priest, Living After Midnight. Yes. I don't like Priest, but yeah, I totally get it. At number 27, I get it. I get you. Am I Evil by Diamond Head. Again, probably actually a top 10 track right there. Diamond Head really, really influenced the scene because they're the reason that Metallica does a lot of the things Metallica does. And Metallica just kind of birthed a lot of modern metal in and of themselves as well. Rainbow in the Dark, Dio. There we go. All right. 25. makes a little bit more sense. South of Heaven by Slayer. Probably not the song that I would have gone with for Slayer, but okay. Shout the Devil does not deserve to be in the top 30 at all. I can understand something from Motley Crue should be on this list, but probably far lower because their influence dropped off very dramatically. Cotton Amash by Anthrax at number 22. That makes sense. 100%. All of those words should happen in that order. Iron Maiden, The Trooper at 21. Sure. Okay. That makes sense. Yeah. Rat, Round and Round. Hell no. Like, not even on the list at all. Not even a little bit. Not even kind of. Peace Cells by Megadeth at 19. Yeah, okay. Zeppelin, Immigrant Song. Not metal. Not metal. Love Zeppelin, in spite of Jimmy Page. I'm not a Jimmy Page fan at all. I think he's sloppy and kind of a mediocre guitar player. But I love Zeppelin. I love the Zeppelin is definitely an example of being better than some of your parts. Back in Black by AC/DC. Not a metal song. Not metal. Iron Maiden, Hallowed Be Thy Name at number 16. Sure, Dickinson. Sure, I'll give it. I'll give you that. Absolutely. Angel of Death by Slayer. Number 15. That's where that belongs. Stargazer by Rainbow at 14. Seems a little high, but yeah, okay. Paranoid by Sabbath at 13. Yes. Cult of Personality by Living Color at 12. Yeah, I can see them being a top 20 track for sure. Metallica 1. Oh, no, that's the one. That's what I was thinking of. Okay. That makes a little bit more sense. Sorry. Fade to Black was, I was definitely confusing the two, and I'm an idiot, and I apologize. Please don't hang me in the comment section. But, yeah, 1 by Metallica probably even should have been higher than number 11, but that's a good one. That's a good one for sure. Run to the Hills. I don't like Maiden, but I kind of love that song, not going to lie. So number 10, yeah, I'll give it. Holy Diver, there we go. Dio by himself, baby. Top 10, yes. Raining Blood by Slayer, top 10, yes. Iron Man, Black Sabbath, yeah, okay. Crazy Train, no. I would keep Crazy Train on the list, but drop it down by like 15 spots, 16 spots. War Pigs, top 5. 100%. That is, I think, probably my favorite example of what the hell Geezer Butler can do on the bass as far as like easy to digest, but still incredible shredding on the bass. Breaking the Law by Judas Priest. Top 5? Oh, that's a rough call. Top 10, maybe. I don't know about top 5. Ace of Spades, Motorhead should have been number 1. Goddamn. Master of Puppets by Metallica. I don't know if I had to put that one in front of 1, but okay. And then number 1, Black Sabbath by Black Sabbath. They're not even trying anymore. Good song. The best example of what Black Sabbath can do. And number 1? That's a fairly rough call, but I think they had better music than that track. And yeah. I don't know. The top 10's a rough one to call, I think, but at least they have legit metal bands in all the top 10 spots. So 10 was Iron Maiden, Run to the Hills. 9 is Dio, Holy Diver. 8 is Slayer with Raining Blood. 7 is Black Sabbath with Iron Man. 6 is Ozzy Osbourne, Crazy Train. 5 is Sabbath with War Pigs. 4, Breaking the Law, Judas Priest. 3, Ace of Spades. That should have been number 1. Metallica with Master of Puppets at 2. And then Sabbath again with Black Sabbath. Yeah, I can see the justification for the top 10. The rest of this list is, except for Crazy Train. Good song. Randy Rhoads is amazing on it. But is that the track that is the most influential solo Aussie track? I don't know if I would necessarily buy that. I think Bark at the Moon has better examples of both Aussie and Rhodes's abilities. And I don't know, maybe it's just me. But yeah, so there we go. That's how I wanted to end the first half of tonight's broadcast. We ran a little long because of it. I thought we might, but I did start late because of us. We already went over that. Glasses and food and things, holidays. So thank you very much for those of you who are only here for the news and the talky bits at the front half. We will see you later this week for the That Just Happened episode on the main channel. And if you are listening on the syndicated outlets, then we'll see you all for the regularly scheduled Wednesday show. Should hopefully go up on time this time. I can't make any guarantees, though, because like I've said many, many times, I am a bit of a one-man show, and so it happens when it happens, and I try to do it on a regular schedule, but sometimes things get in the way. Anyway, I'm rambling. Thank you very much for joining me, nerds. We'll see you in the next one. Those of you sticking around, we are going to probably exclusively play Halo for the gaming portion because I want to unlock all of the things for this season, at least so far, and then maybe once we have a little bit of breathing room, we'll do something else. But tonight, it's probably exclusively going to be Halo, so we'll see you there for the Halo. The rest of you guys, we will see you next week for the live show and or the regular show. Thank you very much for joining me, nerds. Before we go, always, always remember that if it's generally nerdy, it's probably here. The rest of you, we'll see you in a moment.